to the Seamus Heaney Centre podcast. I'm Rachel Brown. In this episode, we hear from our lecturer Tim Lone as he interviews fellow screenwriter and creator of award-winning shows Line of Duty and Bodyguard, Jed Mercurio. Jed is also one of our 2020 Seamus Heaney Centre fellows. This recording comes from an online session with Jed and our students made during the lockdown of spring 2020.
Hello, Jed.
Good to see you. Glenn has stolen my introduction, but can I just, as well as, apart from anything else, having the coolest name in TV, how did it all start for you? I mean, we're very, it's well known that you were a doctor before you were a screenwriter and you were in the RAF. How did that shift happen that all of a sudden you decided one day, I don't want to do that anymore, I want to be a writer?
Well, I never decided I didn't want to do those things. What happened was that I started my first year of NHS work. So I was in the Air Force, but you do your house jobs your first year as a doctor in the NHS. And it was during that time that I saw an advert in the back of the British Medical Journal. TV production company was developing a brand new medical drama. And they wanted advisors to help them construct what it would be about. So they had very vague ideas. And it just felt to me like an opportunity to talk a little bit about what life in the NHS was like then. This is sort of early to mid-90s, really long hours and lack of supervision for junior hospital doctors. And watching medical drama on TV, it felt like they were set in a different era, the way in which the kind of hierarchy worked and a lot of the old cliches, things that kind of almost went back to what medicine was like in the 50s and 60s in terms of hospital life. And so it just felt to me like I wanted to be able to convince them that there was a different story to tell. What was clearly surprising and no one expected was that it would then eventually lead to them asking me to storyline some episodes. And then they asked me to work on what ended up becoming a pilot episode. I ended up writing a pilot episode. And that was the start of me getting involved in writing. I'd never done anything before. I was pretty set on some kind of career, probably in aviation medicine. You know, I wanted to work in medicine, but also I was really interested in flying, and that was the whole Air Force side of things. So it was a bit of a surprise, and actually I just went on a sabbatical when the TV series went out and was successful enough that it got recommissioned. I then carried on working as a doctor but writing in my spare time on the second series. And then I took a sabbatical. I took 6 months, so the medical advisor on set for the shoot, just because we'd had some issues with medical advice in the first series, and it just felt easier that I was there. And then I ended up getting involved in all aspects of production, which again wasn't planned. It was just because it was a very kind of medicine heavy series. Then there was a lot of there were a lot of instances where medical advice was required.
But as a screenwriter, then, what was it? Did it just come naturally to you? Or did you think you had to put yourself through it? How am I going to learn how to do this?
Well, I was in a very fortunate position, Tim, which was that rather than developing my writing and then trying to get people interested in it, the production company had already engaged in trying to develop this project. Mm. So the fact that I was suggesting stories and bringing a point of view that they really wanted to encourage meant that they was mentoring me through the writing process. So I was incredibly lucky to have that opportunity.
Yeah. Tony Garnett, was it Tony Garnett that you were working with at
He became more involved after the first series. And in the first series, Tony kind of took more of a back seat. So it was actually Margaret Matheson who was the producer at World then, and then once a director came on board and the script editor and another producer came, you know, everybody had input. But that main first process of trying to get the script into shape came from a producer and a script editor at World.
I mentioned Tony Garnett, I suppose, for those listening, as he is a legendary producer, as someone who mentored a lot of, Ken Loach was one of his earlier colleagues, wasn't he? The point is that a company like World is always looking to foster new talent, isn't that right? Is that fair to say?
It is fair, and I think there are a lot of companies like that. I was very lucky to have that relationship with World, where that they got behind someone who'd never even written anything, let alone written for TV. Mm. And they were prepared to promote me as a writer and give me that platform.
In the earlier days, I see you wrote novels, which I have not read, but you've written a few novels, one being Bodies, which then became Bodies, the TV series.
Yes.
Were you interested in writing novels first, or?
No, not at all. Again, I had no plans as a writer. So the fact I got this opportunity in TV, and I'd watched a lot of TV over the years, and so I felt really happy working in TV. And then it was really getting to the point where it was about the kinds of things I really wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then I hit a little bit of a sort of series of obstacles in terms of doing another medical drama that was a bit deeper, a bit more serious than Cardiac Arrest. And in the end, I kind of decided that the only way I was going to be able to do it was to write it as a novel. So I wrote it as a novel. And again, I was very fortunate that the novel did well enough, and TV companies wanted to option it. And so it provided a route to the series Bodies.
But will you write more novels?
Well, I wrote novels during a period when I didn't have returning series on the air. So I wrote three novels between Bodies and when Line of Duty started.
Do you have a preference for writing for novels or writing for prose?
I don't have a preference, but I understand that TV is more fickle. So if you're in the fortunate position where people are interested in your ideas and you can get them made, then I definitely enjoy that process. I enjoy show running. I enjoy being part of a big production, and I enjoy the technical process.
Tell us about show running.
Well, it's kind of a term that's been around for a long time in the US and is a much more, to be honest, ambiguous term in the UK. In the US, it describes the creative leader of the project, the executive producer, usually the creator or lead writer. And on my programming, I'm the showrunner of Line of Duty, and I was on Bodyguard, and I was on Bodies. So it's that you're involved in every aspect of the production. You've got a say in who's in it, who directs it, how it's shot, how it's edited, all those things. And you also end up being in those conversations that are with the broadcaster when the broadcaster wants to change things or challenge things. So it just gives you a seat at the table. Is the main understanding of it. But, you know, I've got producing and directing experience, so it means to a greater degree I'm involved in decision making about where we spend our money, whether we hire a certain person or we remove someone or whatever it is.
And do you do a lot of research before you sit down to write?
It varies. I mean, I try and get the balance between how much research I do before I start writing and how much I do while I'm writing. I think you can fall into a trap. It's just my opinion, but I think you can fall into a trap about overdoing the research before you actually explore how the idea is going to work. And so I would tend to let the writing lead the research rather than the research lead the writing.
Yeah. Are you aware of the audience while you're writing?
To a certain extent, I'm writing something that just makes logical sense to me.
Yeah.
And But it's more often when you get into the situation where you're in an editorial setting and people have notes and we're discussing how a particular scene might play or what even lines of dialogue and things like that. And that's when we kind of start thinking about how an audience might respond to certain material.
And do you feel, because you've written for BBC, BBC One and Two, and ITV and Sky, does that affect your writing in a significant way? You said, okay, this is a series for Sky, so I'm going to approach it differently than I would if it was BBC, for instance?
No, I think what ends up happening is that the broadcaster themselves is the one that imposes that imprint. Mm-hmm. That what you're trying to do with your idea is tell it in the best possible way and respect the sophistication of the audience and try and tell a riveting story. I think that once you've developed an idea to an extent where you understand where it might sit in the TV landscape, then of course you want to take it to the broadcaster you think it might best suit.
Yeah,
that's a given. And one of the things that you know is maybe the trickiest for writers starting out is to have an understanding of the landscape, you know, to develop things that you could actually imagine seeing on TV rather than something that may be a good idea, but you can just see is going to fall between the cracks of what the commissioning habits are.
Beware of the marketplace as such. Can you tell us about how many projects would you have going at any one time?
When I'm in production and I'm show running, I'm really 100% on whatever that series is. When I'm in development, then I think most writers would want to have a multiplicity of projects in development just because you have no idea whether they're going to be made or not. So if I was writing another series of Line of Duty or another series of Bodyguard or whatever it is, I know those are going to be made. So I would devote a lot of time to them. But if, say, I was working on a new idea, then I wouldn't just be solely working on that. I'd want to have two or three ideas on the go. And what you'll also find is if you're trying to develop a number of things for TV, if you don't have a greenlit project, and you're still seeking a green light, you can end up just accumulating more and more projects in development because of the waiting time. You know, something, you can end up having a project that has been with a broadcaster not just for months, but possibly even years, where they're still deciding whether they want to green light it to production. So what you shouldn't do is sit around waiting. You know, I mean, that was part of the reason that I wrote novels, was that I was trying to get new things on the air and there was a lot of waiting involved. So I had this kind of desire to write things, firstly, that I thought would work as novels, but also something that would see the light of day, something that actually would then end up on the bookshelves and people would read, rather than a script, which is, if you don't get it produced, then no one will ever know about it.
What kind of a working day do you have? What's your regime? But it seems to me that you're so prolific, I kind of presume you're working 12 hours a day.
No, it honestly varies, Tim. When I'm in production, that's different because I'm tied to what's going on with the shoot, what's going on in the edit, and any other meetings that orbit that, in terms of we might have a production meeting or we might have a recce to check out a location for a big stunt sequence. I can end up just spending, you know, a 14, 15 hour day traveling from place to place doing aspects of show running. So there's no room for writing there. If we're on the same set all day and it's a nice big warm set with power, then I can sometimes just plug in my computer and sit in the corner and I can wander between what's being shot and a kind of makeshift office / desk and write in that environment. But generally, if I'm just working from home, developing stuff, then I don't have a set pattern to the day. I kind of have to fit other things in, and then the writing occupies the spaces.
Okay, so for instance, Line of Duty, what kind of process in terms of the early documents do you go through? So presumably you write treatments for each episode?
Yeah, so the way Line of Duty works was this, and Bodyguard was the same. I deliver an outline of an episode, which is normally a document that is somewhere between 5 and 10 pages long. We then have an editorial meeting to discuss the outline. And that's a point where people talk about, you know, the shape of the episode, things they didn't understand, things that didn't make sense, whatever. And we kind of try and go through all that in detail to the point where either I go away and write the episode with those notes in mind, or if there are very large structural changes, then I may do a redraft of the outline and deliver that back. Then I would move on to write the script. And then when I deliver the script, we have another editorial meeting where we discuss the script in detail. I would then do further drafts of the script, depending on that feedback, until we reach a point where we think it's in good enough shape that I can move on to outlining the next episode.
So you work on each episode at a time. You don't outline the overall series before you start scripting?
There is a very brief outline of the whole series, which is something that is a document that's always work in progress. And sure. Generally, I keep that to myself. It's not something I would deliver. Except right at the beginning of the process, I might deliver a very short document which gives people an idea of what the overall arc of the series might be. But what I won't do is get into a detailed episode breakdown. What I tend to do is keep working privately on the overall episode, the overall series document, which contains my thoughts and ideas for what might happen down the line
privately. So you don't share it with anyone?
Not on Line of Duty or Bodyguard. No,
it's entirely in your head. That's great. Is that because you're very fortunate? Is that because at this point in your career they trust you to do that? I mean, for instance, go back to the first series of Line of Duty. Well, you already were very well established as a writer, but were they more fussy about what they wanted to know where it was going?
So you have some commissioners who will want to look at outlines that are very brief, and then you'll have other commissioners who feel that they want to see things in a great deal of detail.
Yeah.
And you have to navigate that. So when Line of Duty started, and also with Bodyguard, I wrote a document that was really only 2 or 3 pages long, which was what the series is about, how it will work, the fact that it's serialized, what the vague arcs of it are, and just something that gives you a sense of something that is going to work as a TV serial over a number of episodes. But once you've got over that hump, what I have encountered in my career is that sometimes you'll have commissioners who want to see more and more detailed documents of the whole series.
Yeah.
And then you'll have others who are happy to look at the series episode by episode and just refer to a very concise document which gives them an idea of what happens next.
So presumably when you wrote the first series of Line of Duty, for instance, you didn't know that there were going to be 6 of them.
That's correct. I mean, that is one of the things that is the reality of the industry. Even if the series starts off successfully, it may be that the audience drifts away or personnel at the network change, and you never get the opportunity to do the full story arc that was your plan. So it makes sense to have a level of flexibility about how many seasons you're going to do. It may be that, you know, you're told but the next season has to be the last.
Yeah,
Which is disappointing, but it's not as disappointing as when you're told that the one that just went out was the last.
Okay,
and yeah. You've got nowhere to go, and that's what happened on Cardiac Arrest and Bodies. We were just told after the event that was it. We were finished. And we never had an opportunity to carry on and round off the stories at all.
I'm just thinking, I remember hearing David Chase being interviewed about The Sopranos. And whenever they commissioned the pilot to be made in the first place, they were so convinced that there wouldn't be any more of it that they packed an awful lot into episode one. They made it like a single film. Then whenever they were greenlit for the season, he panicked because he thought, I've put everything into the pilot. So damn it. Now he was in a panic to come up with story quickly. Now, he did a wonderful job, of course. But do you feel that going from one series to the next of, for instance, Line of Duty, do you go, shit, I've told all my story in that last season. Where am I going to go next?
Again, I think that's a really good point because you can't foretell the future. Mm. So the reality is that the decision to green light to production will be based on the pilot episode script. Mm. So what you don't want to do is write a pilot episode script that's all set up and doesn't deliver on any of the promise of the series. Because the problem then is if someone reads the pilot script and finds it a bit dull, doesn't really get going, it doesn't matter if you say, oh, yeah, but by episode three, it's really firing on all cylinders because all this other stuff happens. You've got to find a way to get that into your pilot as a way to get over that hump of getting green lit. At that point, you could take a step back and you could think, well, maybe the pilot could be more of a slow burn. And some of these events could happen in the next episode that happened in the pilot. So that's one approach. The other thing is you have to kind of trust in your ability to do it, to be able to be creative and generate story. It's like a sportsman doesn't, you know, Roger Federer doesn't serve an ace and think, how am I going to do that again? He kind of knows that he can.
It's about holding your nerve.
Well, it's just trusting the fact that if you've got the skills and ability that allow you to create one episode, then exactly, you know, hold your nerve, trust that you have those things, and if you work hard and apply the same processes, you will be able to come up with further events and further character development that will carry you through the series.
Do you doubt yourself?
Yes.
As a writer?
Yeah, of course. I think that everybody has doubt. I think that it's a high wire act at times. Yeah. And you know, sometimes if you're doing something like, say, Line of Duty, which has a style where there's a lot of story development in each episode, at times I kind of worry that we're repeating ourselves in a particular season, that a particular character is going through the same, fundamentally the same story, but in different ways. And finding an approach that allows you to change that up and keep the audience guessing what's going to happen next is part of the reason why sometimes in Line of Duty we reach the point where a character is killed or exits the series in some way. It's the reason for that is almost always that I've looked ahead and only seen repetition or only seen the story, that the resolution of the story isn't as dramatically interesting as having the story interrupted at this point.
On a more technical question, I suppose, when do you start shooting a season of Line of Duty? Are all the scripts written?
When we start shooting, there is a pretty clear understanding of what's going to happen by the end. So usually, and I think this applies to pretty much every season we've shot, that we've at least been at the outline stage of the last episode or two by the time we start shooting. That doesn't mean that people are aware of it, but the production team are. And it's only when those have become scripts and they've been redrafted and become shooting scripts that they're issued. So often people who are involved in the series, you know, cast who are interviewed say, oh, we never know what's going to happen, because we only get the first two scripts or the first three scripts, and then we're all kind of wondering what's going to happen next. But I'm usually pretty open with people on set. You know, if it's important for people to know where the story's going, so that it helps with their performance, or yes, it helps yes, with yes. The way the director tells the story, then I will reveal things as and when. But it's actually just the practicalities of getting the script in the best possible shape before they're delivered, and also just all the boring stuff, as you know, Tim, about how much you can shoot on a particular location, how many weeks you've got a particular actor for. All those things sometimes come into how you shape the episodes.
So that's quite typical, then, isn't it? I mean, I remember being horrified to learn that about some of the American shows, NYPD Blue and stuff like that, where the whole shoot would stop because they've run out of script, because they're still waiting for the poor guy in the back room who's writing it. Go, my God, these were the iconic, world-famous TV dramas that are barely written in time to be shot. So, I mean, how do you cope with that pressure?
Well, it is different in the American system, where the you know, network TV, they're doing 20-odd episodes a season, and they are writing in parallel to production. So there they are under pressure to turn things around in a very short time frame. And that's where you do get the problem of scripts not being ready and the series having to shut down for a week. It happens in the UK that there are shows where, for whatever reason, the scripts haven't been ready in time, and that's normally writer failure. On Line of Duty, we don't do that. We just work in the right way, and we have the right amount of time to get things done, and it's all part of the production schedule, that people have an understanding of when things need to be done. And I would include the writer in that. So I know when I need to have delivered a first draft by, a second draft. I know if things are dependent on specific locations or the participation of specific members of cast, I know I have to communicate that in good time, even if I haven't delivered the script. I need to pass that on to the production team so those locations and those cast can be booked. The problem with late delivery of scripts is often that everything else then suffers. They don't, you know, there might be a new character in a script and they have to cast it. There might be a new location to find it.
Can I talk, to shift it slightly, can we talk about other roles, not just a screenwriter? Obviously, you've directed your own scripts. You're credited as exec producer on a lot of the shows you've worked on. And currently, you mentioned the other day when we spoke that you are producing another show, your Bloodlands, which has just finished shooting here in Belfast, by the writer Chris Brandon, who I gather is a relatively fresh to the business. And I'm curious to know what you're looking. Did you choose him?
Yeah, I mean, I read his script. He'd written a spec script, which was a police thriller set in Northern Ireland, and I really liked the premise. I really saw a lot of ability in his writing, and we had a meeting and talked about optioning the script through my relationship with Atric Productions, and then we just worked on it, you know, developed the script to try and get a green light, and we were fortunate enough that the BBC greenlit the production. So then we brought in a producer to produce it, a director, and I kind of took a step back. So I'm one of the executive producers on it. But the main thing I did was I worked pretty closely with Chris, the writer, and Pete, the director. And yeah, it's been a really great experience. And it was just really good to shoot something in Northern Ireland that was actually set in Northern Ireland, rather than Line of Duty, where we're constantly having to hide where we are and paint our brains.
And we Belfast people love spotting those locations. We do love that. But is that something you will do more of? You will do more producing as opposed to the screenwriting? Do you enjoy it as much, or is it? It's a very, because it's what, poacher turned gamekeeper.
It's something that I'm doing in parallel. To be honest, it just came out of a desire to be involved in ideas that I couldn't write, to develop new talent, just to be part of TV where it was things that I would want to watch, but maybe I wasn't the best person to write. But also now, you know, that our plans have expanded and we're developing more stuff, we've got a bigger editorial team, at Hattrick. We are looking for projects. You know, we're reading submissions. We're meeting writers, suggesting ideas, things like that. So it's very interesting, but it's in parallel. I still want to make my own script and be involved in making those.
At this point, we opened the floor to students' questions, which had been flooding in on the message channel, including what's your experience of working with other writers in a team, a writer's room, or with a co-writer?
So my experience of that is that we were just talking about working on something where I'm a producer. So in that sense, I just give notes. It's like happens to me on Line of Duty or Bodyguard. There's an editorial team and they give notes, but I do the writing. I've worked only a little bit in a writer's room. Really, I've only had one experience of working in a writer's room, which was for a series I developed for Canal Plus. And that was a kind of an interesting experience. I think that there are real challenges with getting a writer's room working, where you've got a bunch of writers who are storylining and then dividing up the scripts between themselves. And then I've worked in a hybrid system where there have been a number of writers, but they've just been responsible for their own episodes. So that was a Sky series called Critical, where there were 13 episodes. I wrote a couple of the episodes, but writers pitched ideas for episodes. And then if they seemed good enough ideas, we tried to develop them into whole episodes. And that worked because it was a highly episodic series. It wasn't serialized. And that's something that is also worth noting. The challenges of working in a writer's room or with multiple writers on serial drama are very much different to working on story of the week drama.
Tell us about, obviously, the relationship between a screenwriter and producer and director is going to be very important. Can you explain to us, or can you tell us something, how you feel about those relationships, how they work?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that's changed over time with me. I mean, when I first started out on my first series, I was a brand new writer. I had no experience of TV. And to be honest, I had very little influence on how the series was made. The director was the person who seemed to be in creative control of the project. He was directing all the episodes and he made all the major casting decisions, and the shooting style and pretty much everything was governed by him. And then as that series went on and we had multiple directors and I'd gained more experience, then I was able to have more access to discussing with directors who they were casting, how they were shooting, what the story points were in individual scenes and so on. And so by the time I did Bodies, I'd been working in TV for nearly 10 years. It was something like 8 years that I'd been working in TV. I knew enough by then to be the producer, to be the person who ostensibly was the creative leader of the project, which was effectively being a showrunner, but it wasn't called that back then. And the other thing that really helped me enormously was directing. Before I showran Bodies, I directed episodes of The Grimleys, the comedy series that I'd done. And that was all shot on location and it's single camera. So, again, kind of gaining experience of the technical side of program making was incredibly helpful.
Can you tell us about, talk about right now, COVID-19, Line of Duty is on pause. Can you tell us what the plan, what do you expect, what do you envisage?
I don't know, to be honest, Tim. I mean, we shut down because there was absolutely no way we'd be able to carry on and guarantee that we could shield the cast and crew from coronavirus. So we shut down 9 days before the UK government initiated the lockdown. And the problem is community spread. You know, that you can look at ways of changing how you shoot, but you're not existing in a bubble. So if there's coronavirus in the community, I don't know how you can protect yourself against that.
So, but you're hoping that Line of Duty will pick up again at some point soon.
The word "soon" is the problematic one.
Okay.
nobody knows how this is going to go, and I know that the TV industry is very keen to get started again, and everybody's very keen for this to be over and life to go back to normal. But the reality is that we have a disease in the community, and no one knows what the course of that disease is going to be.
And do you think it's going to change the, apart from the fact that actors might not be able to stand quite so close as before, is it actually going to change the nature of what the stories are that we're going to tell?
Well, that depends on what happens in the real world. If you're talking about the soaps, which have a very rapid transition from shooting to broadcasting, then they are reflecting what's going on in the real world. So the plans for the soaps to resume is that they will carry out social distancing. It will feel like they're in a socially distant coronavirus world. Programs like Line of Duty tend to be on air a year after you've started shooting. It's just a much longer process, and then they're more carefully scheduled by the broadcaster. So the balance we've got to find is being able to shoot safely, but also not make the program look out of step with what's going on in the real world at the time the program is broadcast.
So what are the key things you're looking for when developing an idea? How do you know if an idea might have legs?
I think that's a really good question, and it's something that I think all writers go through. I think that it's a process. I don't think you necessarily just get an idea that you just think, oh, that's it. And it's just something that immediately inspires you and off you go. I think there's a creative process of playing with an idea and developing the architecture of it. So if your idea is just a dilemma for a character or an event which occurs, which then causes consequences, or it's a subject area, something that you've a story you've read that's happened in the real world, or an area of life that people find interesting but maybe hasn't been explored that much in a drama, whatever you choose, you have to go through a development process of figuring out who the characters might be, what their stories might be, what the interplay is between stories and characters. And you may do quite a lot of work on that. No, I'm not talking about just a few days. You might do a few weeks or months trying to figure all those things out. And at the end of it, you maybe need to have the courage to throw the idea away.
Do you discuss with producers before you start working on that idea? Do you say, no, so it's entirely you on your own?
No, because I think I need to get to the point where I've got enough confidence in the idea that I'm prepared to waste other people's time. So it needs to get to the point where if I'm put on the spot about how the idea works, I can answer. And so, because I'm really in the business as a professional writer, as you know, if people are going to put their money where their mouth is and back you, then they really need to be confident that the idea is going to work and it's going to work in the marketplace. It may be, though, that I have an idea that is not fully formed, an idea that is I either don't want to work on it or I can't see a way through it, that I might put to another writer or maybe it would be something for them to do that I might produce. So there are different ways of doing it. But in terms of developing your own work as a writer, which I think is the most important message of this conversation, it's really about getting to a point, a decision point, where you either feel you've worked sufficiently on the idea to go forward with it, or you've worked sufficiently on the idea to drop it.
Do you do that often? Do you drop ideas often?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. There are things that I get very, you know, enthusiastic about, and then I try and figure them out, and then something will occur to me during that process, like, oh, hang on, this is the plot of a famous movie.
Okay.
Hang on, this is just going to implode at this point because this particular character doesn't make any sense, or this world doesn't make any sense, or whatever it is. So, it may be, you know, that the idea works, but it's just not that exciting, or the idea works, but it's not that distinctive. Those are all part of the quality control process.
I know myself, haven't done that, yes.
Yeah.
When you put the work into something, you go, this has to be worth something, but you go, maybe it's not, actually. Maybe you need to go inside again.
There is a problem, I think, sometimes for writers starting out where they have one script and all they do is tinker with it and show it to more and more people. And I think that it's great that you've got a script. It's a shame that people aren't excited about it. But what you've got to do is put that in the bottom drawer and start working on the next idea and just keep doing that.
That's great advice. Look, can you watch TV to enjoy it, or is it all work?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I tend in terms of enjoyment, I tend to prefer watching comedy or sport when there actually is any to watch. But I do watch dramas, and some kind of really, you know, work for me, and I'm really impressed with them. But a lot of the time, I'm just watching them because I need to know what's out there and what's going well, and what's what other people are doing, and what you can learn as well from seeing something. You know, if something is very successful, and then if something doesn't have a lot of commercial success, that's something that I think you need to know, because it may well shape how commissioners respond to ideas in similar territory.
And what about you did adapt Frankenstein and Lady Chatterley? Is that a wholly different experience? Well, obviously, it must be somewhat different to generating your own ideas. Is there something liberating about it?
It is different, is the way. I mean, I think what's really different about it is the way in which people respond to an adaptation. And if you're adapting something that's a well-known story, then people have a preconception about how they want to see that story dramatized. And so you will be hit by people who say it's too faithful, and you'll be hit by people who say it's not faithful enough. It's really a very different experience because of that, not just in terms of how it's responded to when it gets out there, but also in the creative process. What I found on those two projects is that I was bumping up against something that I didn't normally encounter with original ideas, which is commissioners or TV executives or production company executives with really strong ideas about what's a good idea and a bad idea about how you approach it. Okay. And that ends up, ultimately, that's quite restricting.
Okay.
You know, I would certainly consider adaptations. I still would, but I much prefer doing original work.
But okay. So you don't have a list of books that you're ready to adapt?
No, not at all. I know that there are writers out there who have a brilliant time doing adaptations, and some of them, it's the main thing they do. They don't actually do their own original ideas. They put their original thinking and their ability to storyline into making something which is a book or some other intellectual property into a TV series or a TV movie or a feature film or whatever it is. I get that it's a creative process, but they are working within narrower parameters than if you're doing an original piece, because no one has a preconceived idea in their head of what it will be.
Yes.
As the writer, you're the only one who has a real imaginative handle.
A couple of simple questions to finish. Is there anything you know now that you wish you had known when you started off writing?
I suppose the main thing is that I spent a number of years experimenting with what kind of writing I wanted to do. That as I said before, I did something that was a comedy drama, then I did a sci-fi, then I did an out and out comedy, and I think if I just focused on a particular style and area that I was suited to and developed that, it would maybe have been the right thing to do. I think I enjoyed working on those other things and I learned a lot from it, but it just felt like things would have got off to a smoother start with my career if I'd been on that particular tack. And the other thing is just to have a real kind of understanding of that relationship with commissioners. I mean, that was something that I really learned over a period of time, that you absolutely have to manage that relationship with the people who decide what goes on TV.
The very final questions are Line of Duty. Is Series 6 the final series?
We don't know.
Which brings me to my very final question. Who's H? But you're not going to tell us that.
You might need to watch. Yeah. If we get to make it.
Really do hope you do, Jed, because I know I'm definitely going to be sitting at the edge of my seat. Listen, thanks very much. And thank you, people, for joining us.
Thank you, everyone. Great questions, and I hope it was helpful.
The Seamusini Centre podcast is created in a small back room and during these times of quarantine in a series of small back rooms by Ian Sansom, Stephen Sexton and Rachel Brown. With thanks as always to our guests, to producer Chantal Ealsby and to Nick Boyle for his music. Special thanks to the Queen's Annual Fund.